Welcome to Minnesota Mixtape, a weekly spotlight on the Minnesota music scene. I'm your host, Malachi Coons. Black Market Brass and OB Original are back with another blistering Afrobeat collaboration. And we'll check in with Ozone Creations, a collective bringing authentic Afrocentric music to Minnesota. We've got stops at new albums from Yor Smith and Sarah Morris, funk and punk classics from Morris Wilson and Husker Du, a solo project of the Breeders' Kelly Deal from when she lived in the Twin Cities, and so much more. It is Minnesota Mixtape, made possible by the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund and produced at KAXE, an independent and people-powered community radio station broadcasting from the north bank of the Mississippi River. We'll kick off today's show with the Rowe Family Singers. From their 2024 album, Sisters and Brothers, here is Little Problems.
Feels like your memories wanna put me on trial. I wanna be blind but still see. I want freedom, I wanna be dumb and free. A second chance, or a third, or a fourth. I won't ever plead the fifth. All my earth is scorched. I wanna be blind but still see. I want freedom, I wanna be dumb and free. No, I won't ever become a prisoner of your past. You're the jailer, but I'm the judge. And this sentence will not last. A fugitive, a runaway. That's all I wanna be. Rather than take up the mantle of your history, I wanna be blind but still see. I want freedom, I wanna be dumb and free. So take me down, sing me down to that ancient riverside. I'll burn the bridge when I come to it, and I'll wait in heart high. I wanna be blind but still see. I want freedom, I wanna be dumb and free. No, prisoner of your past. You're the jailer, but I'm the judge. And this sentence will not next time that I get home, meet me at the gate. I'll drop down and kiss the ground. I'm sorry for the wait. Had to be blind just to see. I want freedom, I wanna be dumb and free.
During a visit to his home state of Minnesota, musician Paul Spring found himself having trouble connecting with locals after many years spent living in New York City. That disconnect inspired him to write a batch of songs focused on empathy for others and celebrating the differences that make us human. The full album is arriving in November, and that was the title track, Dumb and Free. This is Minnesota Mixtape. Let's keep that same mood going with Gospel Machine.
A mile away. but these few inches from your lips. I can hear it all, I can feel it all.
Hey everybody, this is Lamar, and you're tuned into Minnesota Mixtape.
Man, Was he my man? Was he my man? And I saw him running. And I took his hand. Yes, I took his hand. Yes, I took his hand. And I loved.
We are awake. My lover, my man. It's Lamar bringing us to our first break here on Minnesota Mixtape. See you right back here in a minute.
KEXE was first on the air in 1976. Recently, a couple of the founders, Rich and Susie McClear, stopped by to talk about why KEXE was needed then.
A lot of people were up here thinking they were doing their own thing. And when the radio station came on the air, they found a neighbor was doing the same thing, or somebody across town. And it magically became there are a lot of us up here that have the same thoughts, the same activities.
Neighbors talking to neighbors. We help them get in contact with each other. and talk to each other about common problems.
KAXE is still needed now. We're connected through green cheese trivia, through great music and events. We're in crisis mode. We have had all of our funding cut from the federal government. Please help us out. You can text the word donate to 218-326-1234. I'm Heidi Holton. Thank you so much for your support.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
Listeners know how important it is to support stations like KAXE KBXE.
Anyone who can, be sure to donate, because as all of us know who listen to this, Green Cheese and all the other programming on the stations, we really, really love it and don't want anything to happen to it. So it's really important to give what you can.
One thing I wanted to do is I wanted to talk to everybody out there. Radio is important when it's unique and it's interesting and it's local, and given your current funding situation, everybody out there should be doing something about that, no matter how little it is. If everybody did something, it makes a tremendous difference. Think about Saturday nights with no green cheese. That sounds terrible.
It would be so boring.
This is the queen, and I'm going to make an edict. All cheeses, get your checkbooks out and send in some money to our favorite station and show, and my check will be in the mail tomorrow.
Donate now at KAXE.org.
You're listening to Minnesota Mixtape here on People Powered Radio, KAXE. Thanks for being with us this afternoon. I'm Kari Hedlund. We receive support from Bemidji Brewing, celebrating 10 years of their German Blonde with a week-long anniversary event September 30th through October 4th. Includes beer infusions, events, pop-up shops, and live music. Find full details on their Facebook page, Bemidji Beer, Nice Catch. Do you rely on KAXE? Are you at least 70 and a half years old? Supporting KAXE's future is easy. Ask your financial advisor to set up a charitable IRA, distributions to KAXE. Questions? Call Chris during business hours at 218-326-1234. Coming up at 4 today, Nate Dorr is your host for On the River. And then at 7 o'clock, Brandon Chase bringing you 2 hours of green cheese trivia. Here's more from Minnesota Mixtape. This is Minnesota Mixtape on KAXE. I'm Kari Hedlund. Thanks for being here this afternoon and supporting People Powered Radio in northern Minnesota. We receive support from Edward Jones financial advisor Christina Gallas, helping individuals and business owners reach their financial goals. More information at edwardjones.com. Edward Jones, member SIPC. Our listeners love supporting the businesses that support KAXE. If you're interested in connecting with KAXE listeners, call 218-326-1234 during our business hours to learn more about sponsorship opportunities. And a big thank you to all of our current sponsors. Tonight at 7, you better be sure to tune in for Green Cheese. Brandon Chase is your host this week from 7 to 9. And at 9 o'clock, Diane Ott is bringing you KAXE After Dark. But now it's time for more from Minnesota Mixtape.
It's a minute before 5 o'clock. Good morning. You are listening to 91.7 KAXE Grand Rapids, 90.5 KBXE Bagley, Bemidji, 89.9 Brainerd, and on your smart speaker. We are People Powered Radio in Northern Minnesota. We invite you to join us at KAXE.org. I'm Jennifer Barr. Coming up next, Milk Street Radio, 6 o'clock on the media, and at 7, Weekend Edition, news from National Public Radio. Weather for today, mostly sunny, highs in the mid to upper 80s, breezy south winds around 15 miles per hour, gusting higher. Tonight, slight chance of showers, partly cloudy, lows in the low to mid 60s, and breezy south winds. For tomorrow, chance of showers, partly sunny, highs in the mid-70s, and windy, south winds 20 to 25 miles per hour, gusting higher. For Monday, mostly sunny, much cooler, with highs in the upper 50s.
I'm Christopher Kimball from Milk Street Radio. Granny Smith apples are notoriously tart, but they may also be dangerous.
There have been studies showing that the Granny Smith's acidic profile will make your gums bleed if you eat too many of them.
A comedian roasts and ranks your favorite apples. That's coming up this week on Mill Street Radio from PRX. I'm Christopher Kimball, and this is Milk Street Radio. There might be no better sign of autumn than a red delicious apple. They look great, but the taste can best be described as
coffee grinds in a leather glove.
Today we're ranking apples, and we're not holding back. Our apologies if you're a fan of the thick-skinned Macintosh.
In an emergency, the Macintosh apple could be hollowed out and used as a makeshift shelter appropriate for the harshest of Arctic storms.
No apple is safe from criticism, not even the historic Stamen Winesap.
Final score, 45 out of 100, horse food.
Definitive rankings of your favorite apples, that's coming up on Milk Street Radio from PRX after the news.
This is Drew Miller from Boiled and Lead, urging you to support KAXE and KBXE. Community radio is a lifeline for culture, and these days, it's under threat. If you enjoy it, you need to help pay for it, because nobody else is going to do it except for you. Please support KAXE and the Summer Pledge Drive.
Make a donation now by visiting our website, KAXE.org, and clicking the word donate, or text donate to 218-326-1234.
Climbing up that old gallows ladder, cried out so gaily for his high white cap and feather. I've always been a lively lad, never murdered.
This is Mill Street Radio from PRX. I'm your host, Christopher Kimball. Is there such a thing as the perfect kitchen? Well, one model may have come close. It was called the Frankfurt Kitchen. It was designed in the 1920s in Germany. It was sleek, it was supremely functional, and they even chose a paint color, an unconventional blue, on purpose.
That's like the one unappetizing color, right? So imagine making this beautiful food and then it's in a blue kitchen. But the reason it's blue is because it was thought to repel flies.
That was Jennifer Comar Olivares, curator at the Minneapolis Institute of Art. Later on in the show, we'll get a tour of the Frankfurt Kitchen. But first, it's time for a lesson in apples, the good, the bad, and the just plain inedible.
Macintosh, the national apple of Canada. This dense, curling stone has the refreshing tart kick of an icy northern winter. Unfortunately, this tumor-swollen reindeer nose has perhaps the thickest, most intractable skin of any apple this side of the Prime Meridian. Final score, 45 out of 100, horse food.
That's comedian and self-proclaimed apple-ist, Brian Frangie. He joins us now. Brian, welcome to Milk Street.
Thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here.
you run a website called Apple Rankings. And so just to give our listeners the taste of your style, here's what you've written about the Lucy Glow apple. Quote, "The Lucy Glow is a circus freak apple with yellow skin and a red interior that shocks skeptics into submission." Now, here's the good part. "Most would expect this to taste like an unhealed surgical wound, since each bite resembles a freshly picked scab." So before we go any farther, I think this deserves some amount of explanation on your part, don't you think?
Well, yes. I mean, the Lucy Glow, I wanted to depict how freakish it looked because it tastes so good. The Lucy Glow apple, I rank 85 out of 100, which is excellent, even though it looks so insane.
The Opal apple, quote, "While the outside may be stained with a toddler's accident, in an ironic twist, the interior of the apple does not brown for quite some time." And you actually rated this 82 points in excellent.
Oh, yes. This is one of my favorite new apples. And I have to say, this is a controversial opinion, but I 100% believe yellow apples are greater than green apples.
Okay, so your rating system,
yes,
you actually, despite the way you write about your apples, you do take this seriously.
Oh, 100%. I take my apple ranking seriously. So I created the 100-point ranking system to give a definitive delineation for every single apple I had, so there'd be no question as to how I felt about a certain apple.
So let's back way up. I mean, the obvious question is why? Why are you obsessed with apples? I'm glad you are, because nobody else is willing to say what you say. But what was the motivation here?
Well, yes, I do appreciate the fact that you are recognizing me as a trailblazer,
yes,
speaking truth to apples across the world. But I was just fed up with the apple selection that was available to me in grocery stores, particularly, obviously, the Red Delicious apple, which I call coffee grinds in a leather glove.
Yeah.
It is a 25 out of 100. It's a disgrace. And it's sad. It's really sad, because there was a time back in the turn of the century when the Red Delicious apple was considered the number one apple.
So what's happened to apples? I mean, my take is that apple growers have really gotten into the super sweet, like in corn. They're less interesting. There's less apple flavor. I'm not happy with the Galas and the Fujis and the Cosmic Crisps, because they're just too sweet and they're not complex enough.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to agree with me, or are we going to have a food fight here?
I think we might have a little bit of a food fight, but okay. I do think that the people who grow apples are following what the market demands.
Right.
And up until the, I'd say the 80s, people cared more about locally grown apples that had a specific flavor and attitude towards their region. And then growers started to mass produce certain apples, and the number one feature is how it looks.
Right.
A beautiful, handsome apple that has a waxy glow is purchased more often than an old beat up one that might actually taste better. The second thing is crispness.
Right.
People want crispness. It's like taste has become an afterthought,
right,
in the apple world, where it's like, okay, does it look good? Does it crisp? Then I don't care what it tastes like.
Well, I love making apple pies, and I have to say, if you make an apple pie with Max and Granny's, which is sort of a typical 50-50 deal, right? I mean, it's,
yes,
it's okay, because the granny holds its shape. Although I have to say, I just want to, you know, for the record say, you cannot eat a Granny Smith out of hand. It is a vile, wretched, horrible flavor. It's not juicy. The skin is tough.
I have to warn you, because you are treading in dangerous territory.
Okay.
The Granny Smith,
yeah,
apple has an incredible fandom rivaling the Taylor Swift Eras Tour. If you disparage the Granny Smith apple, you are inviting a torrent of hate, which I have experienced firsthand. People love the Granny Smith, and I don't understand it.
For eating out of hand?
Eating out of hand.
No.
Yeah, I don't even... people who bake it in pies, yeah, go ahead, bake. It's a great baking
it's
apple.
It's a great baking
apple. But a Granny Smith apple is thick-skinned, dense,
yeah,
and it makes your gums bleed. There have been studies showing that the Granny Smith's acidic profile will make your gums bleed if you eat too many of them.
You obviously are not scared of the torrent of hate because you've now
I'm in it. I am deep.
So to enumerate your criteria, taste, crispness, skin, flesh, juiciness, density, beauty, branding, consistency, and cost availability. What does branding mean? I don't quite understand that.
Branding has been incredibly important. Ever since the Pink Lady Apple was trademarked, Apple companies have been focused on making sure that their apples are proprietary. And now it's become a multi-million dollar marketing industry. Like, for example, there's an apple out there that you've probably seen in stores. It's been around for a few years now called the Rocket Apple. There are these little tiny apples that are pre-washed like an astronaut's prefab lunch and placed into a little bottle rocket container that you can open up and snack on without even washing it. Now, that is an incredible amount of marketing for an apple.
Now, what about if you got a Cosmic Crisp and you wanted to grow some and you took the seeds out of an apple? That would not produce a Cosmic Crisp, right?
No, that is the coolest apple fact that anyone will ever hear. Every single seed and every single apple will produce a brand new variety of apple. So if I took a seed out of a Granny Smith and planted it, a tree might grow that produces a red apple. Because basically every apple tree has been the equivalent of sleeping with the mailman, or really every mailman in town, because every apple comes from a flower which is pollinated by a bee whose pollen packet comes from God knows where. So no seed will ever resemble the parent. It's a Maury episode every single time. But that's not even the cool fact. This is, if you can never get the same apple using seeds from that apple, then how do you get more of the same apple?
You graft.
Yes.
You take rootstock and graft on, right?
Yes. You have to clone it by cutting off a little branch or shoot and grafting it onto a living apple tree. In fact, you can graft multiple different apples to the same tree. So that means that every single Granny Smith or Macintosh or Pink Lady, whatever apple you eat today, came from the same exact tree as the first and only one that ever existed.
I never thought about that. Now, I've grown Macallans, and you say any flicker of a long-term relationship is quickly dashed as this actually quite disgusting dirtbag, geez, turns into a mealy, tasteless flush sack within days of being brought home. Yeah, but if you pick it fresh off the tree, it's pretty spectacular apple, I think.
Yes, it is, 100%. But you have to get it like the day it ripens on the tree. And just if I'm ranking apples for the average consumer, they're going to get usually a mealy flesh sack that is not worthy of being eaten.
So what are a couple of apples you think most people can find that are to eat out of hand or probably make the grade?
Yeah, so I mean, first thing I would say is if you're going after a Pink Lady, you like a sweet tart mix, a little more on the tart side, that's great. But don't be fooled by grocery stores who are selling you Crips Pink and telling you it's the same thing as a Pink Lady. It is not. The Crips Pink are the B team of Pink Lady apples. But you know, you can never go wrong with the worldwide favorite available in every grocery store, the Honeycrisp. I mean, the Honeycrisp is a great apple. The downside of the Honeycrisp is that it can be a little expensive, especially because a lot of them are huge.
You know, this reminds me of a discussion I had recently in Italy about saltless bread, which goes back to the 15th century, and the Pope put a tax on salt, and everybody in Umbria decided to not put salt in bread. Saltless bread is vile. I'm sorry, it's just awful. But if you talk to people in Italy who grew up with it, they defend it to the very bitter end.
Yes.
But I finally realized that trying to explain why people should not like something they grew up with is really a fruitless exercise.
Yes, fruitless.
I mean, if you grew up with a Newtown Pippin or a Macallan, good luck telling people the Cosmic Crisp is on its way.
Right. I mean, That's why people love the Granny Smith so much. If you try to attack the Granny Smith apple, it is as if I am attacking a person's identity that they developed from childhood. You can't fight against people's emotions when it comes to apples and any type of food. But I'm trying to take the emotions out of the equation. I am making this a scientific, ranked, numbered system. There's no category for, did your grandma use it in a pie when you were at your happiest?
Brian, thank you for your worldwide tour of apples and especially for your writing, which makes all of this worthwhile. Brian, thank you.
Thank you very much. It was great to be here.
That was comedian Brian Frangie. You can read more of his Apple Rankings at applerankings.com. Now it's time to answer your cooking questions with my co-host, Sarah Moulton. Sarah is, of course, the star of Sarah's Weeknight Meals on Public Television, also author of Home Cooking 101. Sarah, so here's my question. Are we going to get over French cooking? And by that, I'm not dismissing French cooking because I think it's fabulous. But do you think we're headed into an age when we finally cut the final bonds with culinary education and restaurants being rooted in that tradition? Or do you think that that will endure forever?
I think what you're referring to is that French cuisine was considered the reading, writing, and arithmetic to every other thing you did.
Right.
So all the rules, how to use a knife, all that sort of stuff. Well, let me just say this. We both know, we both agree, particularly with what you're doing with Milk Street, that every country has its own way to approach things, and they're all equally valid. I don't think French cuisine, listen, I love it. I think it's fantastic. There's a reason why it's been popular. I don't think it's going to continue to dominate. I think everybody's looking for new tastes, new excitement, new places to go, new toys to play with in the kitchen. So, no, I don't think it's going to continue to dominate. I still love it, though.
You know, I'll say two things. When I travel the world, so many times I ask people that question, and 90% of the time they said they were trained in a French restaurant.
Well,
I mean,
which is what has been.
But the problem with French cooking, it seems to me, is it's devoid of spices, it's devoid of chilies, it's devoid of fermented sauces. It has an ingredient list that's fairly finite, and therefore its cooking was appropriate for that. But if you go across the world, people have so many more tools to play with.
No, that's
so,
true.
But the techniques are still solid.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Let's take a call.
Yep.
Welcome to Milk Street. Who's calling?
Hey, this is Tom Egan in Lambertville, New Jersey.
How can we help you?
So after our last chat about my baking problems with my well water.
You're the guy with the haunted well, right?
I'm the guy with the haunted well.
Yeah, okay.
Fill us in a little more. What is it you're trying to make and having a hard time with?
Give us a recap.
Give us a recap.
The recap is that I've been baking for a number of years, but just in the last year moved to a new house, and it's the first time I'm baking with well water, particularly hard water, and so a water softener. So the water chemistry is very different than anything I've used when I've lived in a city with a municipal water supply.
Right.
Our first few bakes, we had very under-fermented dough. Based on our last conversation, I basically took the Pouliche recipe that I usually use, which is 330 grams of flour, 330 grams of water, and then a pinch of yeast, right? And trying that with three different water sources. Hmm. So because I was only baking one loaf of bread, I wanted to divide it into three. So divided the flour by three. I did 110 grams of the well water with the softener, the well water with the softener bypass, so the hard water, and then another one with bottled water.
And?
My findings were a little different than I expected them to be. The last thing I had to divide by three was my pinch of yeast. When I grabbed my pinch of yeast, I said, well, how the heck do I divide this by three? So I started doing a little more research on how much is really a pinch, right? Long story short, what I realized is, you know, what I'm doing in my typical ferment is I'm grabbing a physical pinch of yeast from the jar of yeast, whereas that seems to be, by the measure of what a pinch is, seems to be pretty light.
It's a half teaspoon you should use, right? Something like that?
The most consistent answer I found was a 16th of a teaspoon is a pinch. When I basically used more yeast in each of these experiments, by the next morning, they all had risen the same.
Didn't we mention that as a possibility? Adding more yeast?
Yes, absolutely.
Well, you know, when I do pouliche, I use you know, a cup each water flour, and I use half a teaspoon of yeast. That's okay. Obviously a lot more than a pinch, so that's what I'm used to. But let's get to the good part. So you had the water that was through the softener. Does that add salt to it?
It does, yeah.